Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to this week's Attacking Scrum podcast. It's myself, Jed, the Mighty Murph, and Dan Killick with you to preview the Wales versus France game coming up this Friday night. We will also be looking back at another weekend of Pro 14 action and mixed fortunes for the Welsh sides. What else we got? Transfer news aplenty. And, what else we got, Murph? What else you got lined up today? You've told me in the pre-match team talk that you're absolutely fizzing tonight. And this is going to be you on your absolute top form.
I'm not sure if telling you I didn't need an espresso before kickoff is the same as saying I'm absolutely fizzing. But I as far as Sundays go, this is me fizzing.
Yeah. When you said that, I was excited as I was about the prospect of watching Navidi, Ellis Jenkins and Jim Botham all in the same back row. And that turned out to be less than a particularly exciting spectacle. Not that it was necessarily all the back row's fault, but a bloody awful performance. Dan, how are you?
I could probably do with some of Murph's fizz or a coffee, really, to get me going. Yeah, not a bad weekend, but slightly under on the energy.
Fair enough. Well, look, all this talk of coffee leads us, of course, perfectly onto a thanks for our sponsors. Early on in the show, a big thanks to So Coffee Trades, who sponsored us for about 4 years or so now. And if you want to perk yourself up, get yourself up in the morning, you can get some great quality coffee at socoffeetrades.co.uk. Right, do you want to start with the regions or do you want to start with Wales, chaps? What are we thinking?
Get the sprouts out of the way first, innit? Why are you laughing, Jed?
Well, that's it, sprouts. That's it, though, isn't it?
Push them around the plate.
Yeah, I haven't got a problem with sprouts.
I'm not a fan.
No.
I'd have them if they had a little bit of bacon around them. But
yeah, that's how I do them, mate. Shredded, cooked to bacon, and loads of butter. You barely even notice there was a vegetable in there. as you say, talking to sprouts, I really did think for some reason I thought there might be something exciting or at least a good game with the Scarlets at Ulster on Friday, and it was thoroughly one-sided. I would go as far as say that first half performance is one of the worst halves of rugby I've seen from a Welsh side this year, and to remind everyone, I support the Dragons, so that is saying something. what went wrong there? Murph?
First of all, I agree with what you said. One or two boys there, maybe more than one or two. It's the worst I've ever seen him play. I don't think I'll name names because
they're all listening.
Yeah, everyone listens.
You always say this stuff.
No, they are though.
One of them, one or two. You know, like one guy in particular looked like he was having troubles in his home life. He just wasn't present in the game at all.
Yeah, I'm glad you haven't named them when you've used that expression. But
and I'll be honest, Ulster are red hot. They're playing really well. They're top of the league now on the back of that. And I never expected anything other than a loss, but it was just abject on it from. And I mean, if you're going to be, I try and be perspective boy most of the time, apart from when it comes to referees. 5 weeks ago, their last game, they beat Leinster. So you can't, it was bloody awful. I mean, really bad. To the point where the coaching booth just looked depressed as fuck. And But their last outing before this was 5 weeks ago. So I mean, you know, at my level, that's a pre-season.
Is it actually five weeks, Murph? Yeah.
Since they played Leinster and they beat Leinster, so you'd like to think if they could have struck with the iron was hot and played the following week, they would have continued in that somewhere close to that kind of form. But now they, they got absolutely smashed at Ulster. They were always going to lose. And now they've got to go and play the Sharks and the Lions, I think, or some other animals down in South Africa.
Yeah, it was. I mean, that's the thing that I think is really alarming, actually. What I would say with Cardiff, I think there have been some poor performances on the road. There was a hammering up in Scotland as well. Was it Glasgow?
I think so.
And then, you know, I think they've looked a lot better at the Arms Park, which would be food for comfort if they weren't heading away to a trip to South Africa. And, you know, that's not exactly going to fill them with joy, is it, based on what happened last time over there?
I would imagine they all got the PTSD from the last, you know, the last visit down there, trapped in a room for a fortnight afterwards. So
you'd almost want to get a false positive test in now, wouldn't you? Avoid that bloody trip. Did you manage to catch that one, Dan, or was that
I didn't
catch you by?
No, I didn't catch that. No, any the question. You know the question is coming. Who played well?
Honestly, I mean, there were some glimpses from Jared in the second half.
Jared's injured, by the way.
Yeah.
Looks like he broke his wrist. Yeah. So now, I'm not even sure who's going to play 10 in South Africa. Like, probably Ben Thomas.
Dan Fish.
Dan Fish would be their best option. Jason Tuvey has got a calf. Reece Priestland's got a calf strain and been released from the Wales squad, and then you're down to Jason Tuvey after that, and after that it's me and you.
If Tubby's got any sense, he'll be feeding that passport to his dog again. letting his dog maul it, like when he missed that trip however many years ago to France.
I don't know. I honestly, at the moment, I can't second guess who they're going to play there.
Cool.
It's got to be Fishy. It's got to be Fish.
Does he want to go, though?
No, I can't imagine he does, to be honest. He's like, every week he's trying to retire and they just keep dragging him back in. I mean, look, Dan, there was very little. Honestly, that first half I thought was just really good players could not execute very simple passes. And, Owen Lane had a really poor game. And as you know, I'm a big fan of his. And I thought he had a great season. He just had a very, very, like Mer said, he looked very rusty. And, you know, without wishing to make excuses, because I think they should have played a hell of a lot better. I actually haven't factored in that 5 weeks. You know, in my head, it was still only 3 weeks ago, and 5 weeks is a long period of time. But yeah, it's just really disappointing because I think that those games, yeah, it's going to be tough. It's incredibly hard. The odds are stacked against you, but you've got to make a decent fist of it. And I think, you know, if you take whenever the Scarlets played over there, that was presumably 5 weeks ago as well, wasn't it? When Tom Rogers almost had his head taken off. And I thought they made a decent fist of that for large chunks of the game. And if that had been a red card, it should have been. They perhaps could have gone on and get a result. And that, I think that's what you want. You just want someone to get out there and be competitive. And they just looked really, really poor. And the basic skills weren't there. They looked like a side who hadn't played for 10 weeks. So it was, really, really disappointing performance from them.
How was the pack, guys? How did they... I know we were looking forward to the back, but obviously it didn't work well, I'm assuming. But no. any glimpses in the pack?
I mean, I suppose what you could say is Navidi got through the game unscathed, which is, and as predicted, I can't remember if we mentioned this on air, but I don't think we did, but we certainly mentioned it to each other that he's straight in that Wales that Wales squad. And anyone not think he's going to be straight in the starting lineup?
Yeah, I don't think.
Don't you?
I think, like you say, he got through the game unscathed and that was good, but he didn't play well.
No, he didn't.
If you were scrabbling around for positives, James Ratty off the bench scored a good try from quite far out through quite a few players. Teddy Williams had more experience.
Oh, did he?
Really struggling, off the bench. But he really struggling for much more than that. It was, you know, every attacking ruck was torture and every defensive ruck was grease lightning. So it's a little bit like Wales Island in the first game of the Six Nations. It was that level, except more points.
Yeah, huge mismatch, and very, very disappointing. Yeah.
On Navidi, did it look like he was just trying to get through the game, but not sort of get too stuck in, or was it?
I don't think he's that kind of player, is he? I don't think many professionals are. But I don't think he was. I think he was thinking he had to get out of there. He was just part of a pack that was blown away, really.
Exactly. Yeah. His first game in ages in a side just getting stuffed. You know, probably with a few games under his belt, he could have made more of an impression on it. But it's just, you know, first game out, so
just hanging on in there. Yeah.
Dan, we're gonna choose our side later on in the show in the second half for next week's game against France. But do you think Pivac will go for Navidi next week? Murph doesn't. What do you think?
I've got a feeling he probably will, with him being straight back in. And Ellis obviously out. Mm. So I think a big part of it will be in training now. If he just gets stronger and stronger as the week goes on, I could see him starting. Yeah.
Yeah, I could see him starting with seven on his back and just I'm a big fan of both those sevens in the squad. I think they're great prospects, but Navidi is just when he's fully fit, and I don't like rushing players back, but I can very much see Pivac doing that.
Well, there are players that can be rushed back. We've seen it with...
It worked with Toby, right?
Yeah. He'd had more game time than I realised. He'd had an hour. He played a full game against someone at home for Bath, but he'd had an hour against Wasps the week before. I didn't realise that. So he'd had more than one game. And as we know, Falatau's done it before, but someone on Twitter, the Cardiff Rugby Life guy, I think was, where's the point in rushing him?
I think the tournament is gone.
Yeah. Tournament's gone.
I think that's a valid point.
You've got a chance to kind of build further to the World Cup now with some games. And if you really do need him in, you can bring him in against Italy. But we've already lost two matches. Mm. So bringing him in is not going to win us the game against France.
No.
Bringing in a whole host of British Lions is not going to win us the game against France on Friday, I don't think. But where is the benefit to him or Wales in rushing him back?
More of this optimism to come in the second half, of course. So stay tuned for that. We're going to move on to talk about, I suppose, one of the brighter notes of the weekend. Scarlett's getting a five try, I think, in the end, victory over
five try
over Glasgow. I mean, obviously, these games are slightly difficult to judge when there's a host of internationals away, but same existed on both sides. Scarlett's, I thought, didn't look massively impressive in the first half, but then were a completely different side. It was almost as if all those performances where passes just weren't sticking, suddenly they were, and they were executing the overlaps and the offloads were going to hand, and all of those things that I think you've just been waiting to click happened, and they got the better of Glasgow. I think the game hinged on the moment when the visitors had a try disallowed for an obstruction from Ryan Wilson, which I think actually was a little bit soft, if I'm honest. But other than that, I definitely some bright sparks in there for Scarlett to get excited by.
Well, look, how many times have regional sides faced Glasgow without all their internationals and still got done?
Mm.
Loads of times. So, you know, it was a surprise, especially 35 points. I mean, if they'd won, okay, yeah. You'd say, you know, 35 points. And one thing I noticed is Gareth Davis looked like a guy who'd been kicking his heels for the last 2 months.
Best I've seen him play since the World Cup, I reckon. Now, again, I know you've got Foss last form and all that, but this is a little bit more than that, I think. With all due respect to Foss last as well, if they want to send us a free hospitality trip down there to Wassenaar, I'd be well up for it. Gareth Davis looked really, really sharp, actually, and really hungry.
And, of course, the other important factor is Rhys Patchell started.
He did, and had a good game too. I think looked really, really keen to get his hands on the ball, looked fit. And I just think that makes such a big difference to that side. Let's not forget how many there's a lot of injuries on top of the the Welsh internationals missing as well. So I think there's a lot to be excited about. And I thought Combier and Rogers were electric, actually. And not just like, you know, the flashy stuff and the finish. Combier's finish, I thought, was excellent for his try. But the two of them combined brilliantly. There was a turnover ball. Combier hacked it 60 yards down the pitch and chased it up. But the pair of them over him, Combier made the tackle, Rogers made the turnover, and again, that's a, you know, an absolute massive gain. And you could just tell that kind of level of intensity, which and match sharpness, which wasn't there from Cardiff the night before. So, yeah, I think, you know, there's a couple of those youngsters are really exciting. I think everyone, you know, knows that Rogers had been earmarked as being a real talent, but I think Combier kind of slipped under the radar a bit, hadn't he? You know, he was part of a very bright under 20 side, and then hadn't had a huge amount of first team experience. I think he's a really, really exciting player.
Well, Tom Rogers. So go on, Dan.
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, Combier, we did hear his name quite a bit, didn't we? Sort of.
I mean, but we're going back four or five seasons, aren't we, really?
Yeah, it was sort of four or five seasons ago. And then, yeah, literally very, very, haven't heard a great deal about him at all. I think he had a couple of knocks as well, didn't he? A couple of injuries in there. But yeah, they got a really exciting and electric wingers there, haven't they? And I caught up with the highlights from this game, but it looks as if the Scarlets found the way they want to play in that second half. And it's great news for the Scarlets to have Patchell back, but also as a Welsh fan, isn't it? Because whenever he's been, you know, fit or marginally fit, he's been in and around that squad. I just think he'll give us something different in the Welsh camp moving forward. He'll definitely be there or thereabouts, won't he?
I hope so. I think if he stays fit, for me, he's my, you know, he's my bench 10.
Anyone mentioning, you know, Scott Williams?
Yeah, we definitely should. You know, the more I see it, I've said before, my concern is just that pace not being there for international rugby. But, you know, his footballing skills have got better and better and better. And he looks really comfortable playing as this second playmaker. And that's, you know, it's encouraging for sure.
He seems, apparently he's only 31 still.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, in this team is not that old.
I think he was capped when he was 20 or something, wasn't he? Yeah, he's very young when he broke into the side.
And what he seems to have now that he didn't have when he was a youngster is a willingness to pass. He didn't like passing at all when he was first on the scene. And now he's not only willing to distribute the ball, but really effective it is. Sleight of hand as well, which is something I keep repeating all the time.
Yeah.
Sleight of hand from your centres is what gets you over, you know, gain lines and through gaps. So, he's arguably playing better than any centre in Wales.
You know, it was another really, really one of those performances that, I just think every time I keep seeing him, I just think, you know, I would happily have him in that Wales side again just to find out, you know, just to see if he's fully fit enough and quick enough. That's the quickness is my only concern. And you're right, Murph, about that willingness to pass, because I remember the Scott Williams game at Twickenham. About 5 minutes before he stripped Courtney Laws, he ignored a 3 or 4 on 1, didn't he?
Well, it was his, worse still, it was Jonathan Davis. Mm. It's not as if it was like a...
Yeah.
There used to be, whether there was any truth or not, there used to be a thing where they reckoned certain clubs, once they were in the national team, wouldn't pass to each other on the pitch in various different squads over the years. And you'd think it was one of those occasions, but it was actually Jonathan Davis outside him on his own. And he tried to throw a dummy instead and got caught. later on, he redeemed himself by taking the ball off Courtney Laws and winning the game. But it wasn't something he was keen on as a youngster, but it's a proper, you know, string to his bow now.
Yeah, it is. I mean, look, I think it's the Scarlets for me have just started to, like you said, Dan, I think they found their style of play, and there were a couple of ugly results that they should have got more out of games in recent weeks. But I think he's pivotal to that midfield, actually, and I think that it really helped having Patchell inside him. You know, it's having two good footballing options. Murph, do you happen to know who the Scarlets got next? Because I did not look.
No. When you look at going back to what you were saying there about Patchell inside him, when you look at that sort of front four, if you like, of the backs, Gareth Davis, Reach, Patrick Scott, Williams, Johnny Williams. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's you can easily see why you can see why they're scoring tries, can you? We get that could easily in another season. That could be the first choice Welsh lineup, like, you know. So it makes sense that they've started to click anyway.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. So some encouraging signs. They've got their postponed trip to South Africa coming up as well. So I think it's the Bulls next to Scarlett.
But they're all delighted.
Yeah, exactly. God bless the UFC, yeah. Right, let's very, very quickly, not just because we're running out of time, but because it was a thoroughly depressing and utterly predictable hammering for the Dragons in Limerick, I presume. I actually haven't seen this game, I confess, but you know, I think we all could have.
You have to go back and watch that one, Jed.
Oh, mate, jeez. Yeah, that's it. That's a real way to bring you down, isn't it? And I did want to talk about the Dragons, though, because it's been an interesting week off the field. Some interesting recruits coming in. So Max Clark, who the Bath centre who played under 20s for England, I think he Bridgend, I want to say, he's from somewhere. I'm sure he's born in Wales.
Don't know.
But yeah, he's signing. He's signing for next season, and Sean Lonsdale as well. Wow. Coming in from Exeter,
which is the excitement then.
Well, I think it's encouraging. They're good signings. The question is now, is Dean Ryan the right man to kind of lead them through and get the results out of it? Because arguably, he's had a much stronger squad than any Dragons coach has had for quite some time.
The obviously the other one is we've mentioned before is JJ. And the issue there is Dean Ryan responsible for attracting those players? If he is, then you could argue that it's worth holding on to him. If it's just being done by the board or whoever in the background, then there's rumours that a lot of players. Jamie Roberts, Tavis Noyle have gone where they've gone because they can't wait to get away from the coach. Rumours only. I wouldn't want to be quoted in papers. Tavis Noyle has said it publicly on SOC, on Jonathan's show.
Yeah, I saw them.
I think he said the coaching staff are too English, which is a bit on the nose. And Jamie Roberts, he went saying it was an ambition, but privately I think he wasn't keen on any of the setup there. So it's a tricky one. The only, like I say, the only thing that would save Dean Ryan in terms of extending his contract would be the fact that he is making good signings. So Max Clark is a really good signing, and Sean Lonsdale probably is even cleverer because he's low profile, but you just know he's going to improve him. Hopefully, therefore, not too expensive, and that's the big thing for all the regions is good signings who don't cost the earth.
Yeah, absolutely. I have noticed. It's a really good point, Merv. I have noticed that I think all the press releases have got a quote from the player saying, Dean Ryan has sold me the vision." Now, again, whether this is party line or we all know that stuff has to go through a team of PR before it gets to the papers. But I mean, essentially, he kind of is doing that role, that dual role, really, isn't he, of director of rugby and head coach. But you're right, whether or not it's the board making the signings or him, I suppose we won't know. But it's interesting.
Do you think it is, Jed?
Do I think he's making the signings? Mate, I've got no idea. I've got no intelligence to give you here. Arguably, no intelligence whatsoever.
There's a lot of kind of research going into it, isn't it? Because I think obviously Max Clark is qualified.
Sean Lonsdale.
Yeah. Well, most of us would be completely unaware of that. Obviously, I don't think O'Hanrahan qualifies.
No, he's
for Welsh international. And he's also getting a bit long in the tooth as well. But they just, if they make any more and if Dean Ryan's taking the credit for them, then you know, he's made other good signings already, you know, since he's been there. But he just, there's a whiff of unpopularity within his own team. So
I mean, with the greatest respect to Tavis Knoll, he's a player I quite enjoyed watching over the years. But, you know, his career kind of meandered a little bit when you consider how much potential he had. And, you know, he was kind of something of a bit part player. I think it'd be more concerning if, you know, if Roberts was like, nah, just don't, this isn't for me. But again, you can see that kind of coming towards the end of the career. Would you want to stay in Newport ahead of 6 months in playing for the Waratahs? And he's done that his entire career, hasn't he? He's done a few seasons here, a few seasons there, a few seasons here. And, you know, and has obviously enjoyed that experience. For what it's worth, I think Ryan will be there. I think he will get an extension. And he's got to make it count. They've got to start the season well, because they, you know, I know it's still going to be, it's not like they're suddenly, you know, you've suddenly got Leinster's squad overnight. But if you've been backed by bringing in good quality, shrewd signings, then I think that you've got to show from minute one that it's going to work. Pressure's on, because it doesn't look like it's going to get any better for the remainder of this season.
No. Going back to the actual game against Munster and actually the Cardiff Ulster game, Ireland are starting to look really good at scrum half, because Nathan Doak looks better than all of them.
He's a classy operator. And there's something I really like about a nine taking goal kicks. There's something retro about it.
It's weird how he looked completely, playing against Wales in the last summer's under 26 Nations, he looked completely in control and unflustered the whole way, which you'd expect, because he was just better than most of the players on the pitch. But he still looks like that now, playing against.
Yeah, he does look good, doesn't he?
Playing against the good boys, the big boys. And that, you've got that guy who I think, personally, I think he's better than the others. But also Craig Casey was really good against
great player,
the Dragons. So, yeah, they're looking sorted in that position for when the because Jameson Gibson Park is not young, and obviously Conor Murray is really getting on, but they look like there's ready made replacements already, which is a bit of a sickener.
Yeah, there's some classy operators in there for sure. I definitely agree on Doak. I've seen him a few times recently. I think he's played in all those games against the Welsh sides recently, Cardiff Dragons and Scarlets, and looked really good in all of them.
And in Europe as well, you know, against top French sides, he just looks comfortable on the pitch, and he's, you know, he's just fresh out of the under-20s team. So, very impressive.
The Ospreys managed to get a win as well, Murph. Again, was driving back today, so I haven't seen that one, but it sounded like a bit of a labouring past the Dragons of Palmer, as they're known. the only side in the league worse than the Drags. Yeah, anything of kind of particular note in there?
No, in better form, they would have got a bonus point out of that game, but they made hard work of it at the end. I suppose it is, you know, I can't say it's encouraging, but I mean, they're stripped of their international players, and you couldn't put it past any of the Welsh regions at the moment to lose to an awful side once all their best players are gone. So, Stephen Myler was being very sensible on the pitch, I thought, making sure that he didn't get carried away and just got the win under their belt, you know.
It's one of those games, one of those fixtures, isn't it, where you've got Zebra in there. Was it away as well? Was it at Liberty?
No, I think it was home.
It was at home, right.
Yeah, it was at home.
It's one of those games on a Sunday during the Six Nations period. All your players are away. It's always going to be a forgettable fixture afterwards. No one's going to, never going to live long in the memory, even if you romp to a 10-try victory. You've just got to get out there and get the results and keep get the points on the board for the remainder of the season.
Yeah, I tell you what I noticed, I might have this wrong, but they switched Morgan Morris to 7.
Did they?
Yeah. Well, he was wearing 7, so. Ethan Levi Roots was wearing 8 and looked miles better than I've seen him. I think they're onto something there. I don't know. I don't know if Morgan Morris is going to be an out and out 7 going forward. But Ethan Roots looked really good, I thought.
There's loads of sevens in that side, though, isn't there? You know, obviously, yeah. When Tipperick comes back, you've got you've got the young lad...
Jack Morgan.
There's Jack Morgan, and then Harry Deaves.
Yeah, I think he was on at one stage, Harry Deaves.
Yeah, he's put in some eye-catching performances in some pretty, you know, some pretty tough fixtures as well, I think. And as you know, obviously got good form with under-20s too. So I think he's definitely one that... there's some real excitement around him, but there's a lot of sevens, like, you know, whereas obviously eight is a much more difficult, you know, it's
sure.
a different kettle of fish, isn't
it? The Ethan Roots is the first time he's really caught my eye, because he was winning a lot of line out ball as well on the day, so Prothero came off the bench, and Keelan Jars looked okay, but it was just,
and Lydia was back as well.
Yeah, man of the match.
Yeah.
But it wasn't anything on a par with the way the Scarlets performed.
Baldwin back as well.
Yeah. I think unless I got it wrong, I think he missed, overthrew his first lineup back at the club. But that was his first game, wasn't it, today? First game back?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, he overthrew his first lineup off the bench. But other than that, he was fine.
Yeah, I mean that's been. I know obviously he's come back to Wales for personal reasons, but that's a good sign in for the Ospreys. You had, you know, like six hookers at this point last year, and then obviously Scott Huffinger retire and even Phillips in horrendous circumstances, and Sam Parry's always been one of those players who's had a lot of knocks, and obviously he played today as well.
Yeah.
But I think that's a really good sign in, and. You know, I tell you what, stranger things have happened. If he can put a bit of form together, you might see him in a red jersey again at some point.
Yeah, he seems. I still think he looks about 2 stone lighter than when he was playing for Wales.
Yeah,
just looks much leaner.
Back on that skateboard.
Yeah, or back on the pies.
Right, boys. We will go on to talk about. Red shirts after the break, but that's exactly what we're going to do now. Quick regroup, and then we'll be back to preview Wales versus France. Right, time then to take a look towards the fourth round of the Six Nations, the daunting Friday night fixture of Les Bleus coming to Cardiff. We're going to ignore my usual annual rant about how much I hate Friday night fixtures, because that's a given. Please go back to any of the previous years to hear, if you want to hear that rant, which I'm sure no one does.
By the way, we haven't done it for a while.
No,
Wales hasn't hosted a Friday night game in years, and I thought it was because the city of Cardiff, the council or whatever, had said it's a bastard nightmare, and we're not doing it anymore. That's what happened. I'm convinced that the council said, listen, the infrastructure can't sustain. This is what, for people who are not from Cardiff, I'll tell you what happens, right? People who live and work here start their rush hour at 2 PM because they know there's going to be a massive rugby game in Cardiff that evening. That rush hour drags on quite a long time, as you can imagine. And then everyone else is trying to get into Cardiff and it's not a big city, go to the game. So you end up with like a 5-hour rush hour on the Friday, which in all directions, not, you know, when sometimes if you go in, if rush hour is going outwards and you're going inwards, it's fine. But this is in both directions, everything is buggered. And it got so bad that I was under this understanding that the council had said, well, listen, we can't do these. We know, you know, this part of the wider tournament, but we can't do these Friday night games anymore. So only France was staging them. They all seemed to play us in Paris on a Friday night, and we hadn't had one in years, and here we are. But maybe during COVID they forgot that it's a fucking nightmare.
If it's a financial decision, that might have swayed things in the wake of COVID as well. You know,
but is it financial? Did they get a bonus for playing on a Friday?
I mean, there must be something in it. If it's related to getting a better TV deal. And you go, there must be some incentive. Why would Wales do it all the time otherwise? You know, Wales and France are the other sides who've done it, you know, done it consistently throughout.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just, as a resident, I dread it.
Mm.
I dread the Friday night game in Cardiff. I don't know what. Why can't England do it? Why can't England do one?
Well, I tell you what, if there is a place in the world that's even less equipped to deal with traffic on a Friday night, not just traffic, but infrastructure, is Twickenham. And that place is such a ball ache to get to anyway, unless you live in Twickenham or Richmond. It's horrendous, and the trains are shocking. You know, and you've got people coming from, coming from all over the country to try and get there. Not that I'm saying they shouldn't. I'd quite happily let England have it. But they,
It feels obviously small man, Celtic man's chip. It feels like BBC London exporting the issue to other countries. I don't think they would do it in a million years.
The only time I remember England playing on a Friday night was the World Cup opening game, which is obviously outside of their control because the tournament starts on a bloody Friday, so they have to. And even then, it was like an 8 o'clock kickoff, and they were very nearly. Didn't get people in the ground in time for it because, or in time for the stupid opening ceremony or whatever. But
it'd never happen in England.
No,
would it?
No.
But there must be some financial thing because Wales put their hand up way too quick. You know, there must have been a reason. I think it was like a Roger Lewis was. I don't know.
It might have been under him. Yeah, but I don't think there is a one step forward thing. If you want to stage the Friday, I think it's just scheduled onto them. And maybe we should Google it. I don't know, but I'm sure the Cardiff Council had said no, we can't do that again. It's a nightmare. Anyway,
also,
it's so bad. I prefer Sunday kickoffs. That's
yeah, I do. I do. Yeah, and I don't. Yeah, and I don't even live in Cardiff, but it's. It's a complete stitch up for fans.
Fans coming from North Wales or West Wales or even Mid Wales, they've got to take a day off.
Yeah.
They've got to take a day off. You can't get there otherwise. So, or maybe half a day. But, it's on a, listen, I know we're in a TV age, but it's on a par with those games that I used to stage amazing games on a Wednesday afternoon.
In the amateur
era where people, if you had a proper job, you couldn't go watch and it probably wasn't on telly either.
When Monmouthshire were playing South Africa on a Wednesday afternoon or something like that.
Well, I think I said this before, I missed off school to see rest of the world play the British Lions.
Oh, yeah, you did mention that. Amazing.
In the mid-80s. I think the big Earth at 50 match in 1972, which was like a Barry John team against the rest of the world team or something, that was just like a 2:30 on a Wednesday. That's early 70s. That's like a different planet altogether. But I suppose that couldn't be a thing in the professional era because you've got to sell the TV rights and the tickets to go. But
the thing I don't get though, Murph,
that's what it feels like though. It's not practical for anyone who lives here.
No, it's not. But the thing I don't get with it is it's not like there's Friday night games every single week and everyone takes their turn. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If it was like that, you could say, oh, well, look, the TV audience is so much better on a Friday night that we need to have one a week, and it's going to mean that we all get more money, everyone takes their bloody turn, and it happens. Same as Sunday games came in that way. But it's kind of so all over the shop that you have, it's only one Friday night fixture a year, I think. And then, you know, most of the time you have a Sunday fixture, and then you have all three playing on the Saturday in the last week.
I think in the early days of it, I think Scotland staged one or two. That quickly dried up.
I
can't remember Ireland ever staging one either.
I thought the very first one was us away in France in 2009. I thought that was it. But I may be wrong on that one.
I think we've established the negative.
Well, considering that I said we're going to forego the rant about that, we've definitely established that. let's take a look and preview the game then. Dan, Mr. Optimism, what Achilles heel in France, or what bit of genius from Wales can we expect that's going to cheer us all up on a Friday afternoon, Friday night even?
Well, they haven't got any weaknesses, have they? They're They look like the real deal now, don't they? Forwards, backs, bench, the players that haven't even made the squad, they look mighty impressive, and you know, are probably favourites now for the World Cup as well, aren't they? But I do feel that we can put a real good show in against them. Friday night, Cardiff. Obviously, we just gone on for 20 minutes there about how you know, we don't like the Friday night games. But there's something within me that thinks that we can put up a real good performance against them and give them a bit of a shock. When you were talking about the Friday night thing, I wanted to say that Wales to win. I can't quite see that, but I've got a feeling it's going to be a cracker, and we're going to run them a lot closer than maybe people realise. There's the optimism.
Well, yes, yeah, look, I asked for it, and there it is, with a big spoonful of killick optimism. Murph, do you see it the same way?
No. I think even if we carry on the form from the second half at Twickenham, I think they still got too much. The handicap, me and Jed are keen on a bit of a bet. So handicap betting with the bookmakers, they establish like a point start for one team or the other. And it's plus 12 for Wales. So Wales are getting a 12 point start of the bookmakers, and then you can have 11 to 10 on or an even money bet. And I would, if I was choosing one side or the other with a 12 point start, I would go France minus 12.
Would you?
Because based on all form so far, they're 20 points better than us.
Yes, I think they are. What I would say that Wales have done very, very well is they have at times stopped sides from playing. That second half against England, whether that was just England grinding to a halt. The whole game against Scotland, really, other than the first 10 minutes, I thought, you know, that's a polite way of saying I think we kind of dragged them down to our level. You know, maybe...
England or
Scotland and England to say.
Yeah.
I mean, England actually probably that is unfair, because I do think that England were very poor in that second half, and Wales did, you know, put together some moves and, you know, and outscored them 3-1. So I think that would be a bit unfair to say that. I also think, as we mentioned a few shows ago, home advantage is counting for so much right now. Whether or not it's any more than it was pre-COVID, I have this small theory. But Wales have a good record at home. You know, I've not been impressed with the performances necessarily, but a win against Scotland, we would have taken that before the game. You even look back to the autumn, and a win against Australia is never a gimme. So, you know, I think that the home record is actually something that that I would say probably makes that 12 point gap about spot on. The bookies usually are about right with that spread. But I would probably be tempted to buy Wales at plus 12 there. I could see, and again, we have a knack of getting a little try towards the end of a game, don't we?
We do, yeah.
I could see France.
That's what the handicap in Twickenham last week, week before, was a similar gap. I think it was Wales plus 12.
Yeah.
And Wales smashed past 12. So, we lost by 4 in the end. But I just think France had a completely different proposition to England at the moment. Free scoring, all court game, and England England are limited. Let's be honest. I mean, I know obviously we're going to talk about Wales France, but the most interesting game this weekend is Ireland England in London. Because if England don't play better than they did against us, they're going to get battered by Ireland. I think they will raise their game as it happens, but if they don't, if they continue in the same form that they've shown this tournament, I think Ireland are going to batter them.
Let's stick with that, because that's definitely going to cheer everyone up. Dan, do you? I mean, I could see that happening. What do you reckon, Dan? I mean, Ireland, I think, are in one of those veins of form, you know, as they tend to do 2 years out from or 18 months out from a World Cup, where they're reaching peak optimism before they suddenly remember they're Irish ahead of the World Cup and start choking. I think that there could be a very big performance in here. And if England don't step up massively, then like Murph said, I think that game is there for Ireland. What do you reckon, Dan?
Yeah, there's a good rivalry, isn't there, between the two sides. I think that, yeah, Ireland have got it within them to, yeah, they could really do a number on England, but if they played anywhere near like they did against us. But I think England will raise the game. They have to. They can't be as poor as that. You know, they've got, with everything they've got, I just, you know, how many times we come back to old Eddie, don't we? But I think that'll be a close game, I reckon. I do think England will be bang up for that, and be a big physical match between the two. And England have got it within them as well, that if they get that backline firing, which is a big if, but if they can get that backline going, they can cause any sides real issues. We just haven't seen it and don't see it enough, do we?
I mean, don't get me wrong. If Mike Adamson is reffing, they're going to put 30 on Ireland.
Yeah,
and you know, and that is a thing, isn't it? We know that, they get the so many number of penalties, kickable penalties in the game at home at Twickenham, but I just think, you know, the way the patterns of play that Ireland are using, if England don't stop them at source, that is first phase, set piece and phase play, Ireland got much more going on behind, much more, like unrecognisably more going on behind, especially in the centre,
yeah,
than England. England got nothing going on in the centre.
No, I don't think they do. Yeah. They look really confused to me.
They cannot get the selection right in the middle of the park.
Elliot Daly was released to play for his club this weekend, so who's going to play outside centre? I mean, Henry Slade is going back to outside centre, and if he is, who's going to play 12? Like, it's...
Well, who else is in the squad? Is it Atkinson and Northmore? Is it Northmore? What's the other Harlequins lad?
The only 12 in the squad outside of Tuilagi was Atkinson, and up till now, he hasn't even put him in the match day 23. Yeah. So whether he's going to throw him in against the Irish, I don't know. I mean, it looks that way if he's released Elliot Daly. I'm pretty sure if Farrell was fit, he'd be playing there.
Yeah, he would, undoubtedly.
Yeah.
If there's parity up front, Ireland's back are head and shoulders better than England's.
Yeah, I think, but the centre is definitely that position that, you know, that you've hit the nail on the head with. Because I don't think it matters who Ireland pick out of their centres to play there. No. You could pick any of them, and I think it would be so much more experience of dominating international rugby games within that position that I think it would be. You're right though, Dan. It's a hard place to go to, and I think it will be tight from what I've said. Then, you know, the more I think about it, the more it will be tight. But I think Ireland will get the win. Whether in the game or not, I think they're the better side and will be able to overcome that away.
I agree with you. The Ireland are the better side at the moment. I just think that physically, England have got a, you know, England can bring physicality, which can be up there with Ireland. And if Ireland don't get Ireland might get reffed off the park. The way in which they play is so close to the line that at home, England, they've always got the decisions, haven't they?
That's a good point, actually. If you took Jacko Piper out of the game against us, it wouldn't have been so one-sided. We'd have been getting regular breakdown penalties. So that could level things out at Twickenham. But I think there's enough wisdom in the setup at Ireland, though, to recognise that. And they're not going to fly in from all angles like Superman, like they did against us. I think they'd be much more accurate with it.
Yeah, they look as if they can change, can't they, now? If something isn't quite working out on the pitch, whether it be their pattern of play or the refs having a go at them, they can change. Which is a slightly different Ireland.
They had a stinker there 2 years ago, didn't they, when things weren't going their way, and a lot of players, like Ryan, lost his head and was just was running around like a headless chicken, and it really didn't help the cause. I think you're right. I think there'll be a lot more savvy when it comes to the breakdown next weekend.
If you're looking for positives for England, Ireland have lost both their props, I think, haven't they? Porter's out. And I think Tadhg Furlong, is he injured?
That's news to me. God, I'm well prepared this week.
I might have that wrong. But definitely Porter got injured. But possibly he passed fit for Saturday in the case of Furlong. Furlong went off, didn't he, in the last game? Anyway, so that's, you know, possibly a leveler in the game. But because, as I said last week, England, if they go with Sinclair and Genge as opening props, they don't really want to scrummage early in the game.
They might be better to change that up.
They could well bring them on.
You know, have Marler and is it March?
Stewart. Will Stewart.
Stewart. That's it. Yeah. He's. Yeah. I mean, those boys. I'd be tempted if I was England to start with them.
Hmm. Yeah,
against Ireland. It'd be a great game. I'm looking forward to this one.
Yeah. Let us bring it back for the end of the show to Wales versus France. We're going to select our sides shortly, but something Murph pointed out, which I'd completely forgotten, you had Dan Bigger, Nick Tompkins and Toby Faletau all in action on Saturday, which means a 6-day turnaround for three players who are pretty pivotal to Wales' chances. How much do you think that will be an issue, Dan?
I think those players, it'll be okay. Tompkins seems like he can just play every night, and he'll be fine. You know, he'll be starting for sure, won't he? Yeah, I think bigger. I think, you know, he sometimes carries knocks, doesn't he? But he plays.
So he played a full 80 as well, which is, I was surprised that he normally finds an injury to get off the pitch with when he's in that situation. Goes off just after half time or something. He played a full 80. So did Faletau. Tompkins only played, officially, he came off at 67 minutes and he was man of the match. But the big one is Duane van der Merwe. Duane van der Merwe got red carded in Worcester. I imagine they'll fudge the hearing on that so that he's free to play this coming weekend. They'll put the hearing for it in the middle of next week and then possibly rescind it because there was nothing malicious.
Hand off to the face, wasn't it?
Yeah, it wasn't anything malicious in it. It's one of those, in full speed, you barely even notice it, but it's slowed down with a HD camera. It looks really nasty. But the point is, Duane van der Merwe will probably get away. Like I say, they'll fudge the hearing and delay it or whatever, but he was playing, he could have pulled a hamstring if he's playing on the pitch, and the size of him and the speed he moves, he could have pulled a hamstring in that game. And he's the, outside of Damien Penault, he's the best winger in the tournament. So he might have a suspension where he misses some game time in the Six Nations on the back of the fact that he played in a club game in the gap week when he like Max Malin's had his feet up. Duane van der Merwe, who's, like I say, one of the best, if not the best winger in the tournament, had to play because England have got an agreement where they can rest, pay the English professional rugby, whatever they're called, English professional rugby club body to rest their players. And Scotland don't have that right, nor the Wales. Therefore, very important players, like the proper spine of the Welsh team, was out on the pitch yesterday, 8 and 10. Because they don't have the option to pay the English professional clubs to rest important players. And like I said, at great length and with real fucking bitterness on this pod before, it's not fair.
But this is the lunacy of the sport we love, though, Murph. It should not come down to English economic superiority, right? Because you shouldn't be playing club rugby at the same time as international rugby. It's madness. It is absolute madness. You know, it's a hangover from the amateur era.
Yeah, I think the clubs have got to carry on playing during the Six Nations because otherwise they can't complete their fixtures. So the games have got to be there. But when you know, they used to be, I might have this wrong, there used to be barely any gap weeks in the old Five Nations. Mm. I think there was one gap week. And that was a fairly modern addition.
Well, yeah, but you also had buys, didn't you? Because you could only have two fixtures per weekend.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So there was no need of a bye week. There was no need of a gap week then. Mm. And also that would be compact. And then as soon as it was over, everyone would be back to their clubs and everything. Everyone was happy. But now, because it's got two gap weeks and lots of intense games, it drags on for quite a long time. And then the clubs want to get their money's worth. But I just think it's totally unfair if Max Malins is resting and Duan van der Merwe is on the pitch. Scotland and England are not playing each other this weekend. Mm. Otherwise, I don't think Duan van der Merwe would have played, because they know it's a bad look for the sport. And like I said, when we talked about this at length before, the Six Nations organisation, whatever they're called, should be pressuring the English rugby club, professional rugby clubs, whatever they're called, to allow the Scottish Rugby Union and the Welsh Rugby Union to pay them to rest certain players if needs be, because the English setup is indirectly buying an advantage over the other countries. Obviously, it doesn't affect France because they won't pick anyone who doesn't play in France. And it doesn't affect Ireland because they won't pick anyone who doesn't play in Ireland. Mm. But for Scotland and Wales, who can't afford to go that route, they get England get an advantage over them.
The impact as well it has on the training week, is massive, because Bigger, for instance, or and Faletau could be laid up for the week just on. On the stretcher bed.
Yeah, just having a rub.
Yeah, literally the whole time.
So yeah, ironing out creases all week. Yeah, easy.
Yeah, there are players, aren't there, that literally they have to be on the bed the whole time, just to get themselves in a patched up, ready to get on the pitch. So
yeah, it doesn't get enough attention in the media. Mm. The issue doesn't get enough attention in the media. It's a smirch on the tournament. That's what I say.
It'd be great, wouldn't it, if you could have a behind the scenes as well on what happens to them now. Going back when they go back into camp.
They'd be travelling back today, wouldn't they?
Dan, according to you, they're all listening anyway. So if anyone wants to give us that behind the scenes bit of insight, then our DMs are open.
Jed, keep an eye on them.
I will. Right, we're going to pick the side as well now. Let's rattle through this. We'll start with the forwards as we always do. Any changes to the front row?
Well, it's only if Tom Francis has recovered from his concussion or not. Otherwise, it's exactly the same.
So, I'd go the same.
Do we think he will have recovered?
Well, it's going to look really bad on the country if he haven't, because they made him play on. Mm. So I would suggest that he's fine, because it'll look an even bigger issue than what it was. So,
well, all right. Let us assume that he is fine, and we stick with the same front row, second rows.
Same.
They're going well, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, back row. We've touched on this already. This is not what Pivac is going to do. This is what Dan Killick, with his selection blazer on and his half-smoked packet of Rothmans, what are you doing in that back row?
Oh, it's hard. This is hard, isn't it? If Navidi's looking good in the training, I'll bring him in.
And Murph, you are doing what?
I stay the same, because I can't see any point in rushing Josh at this stage. When if we were, maybe if we hadn't won a game and we were desperate for a win and things were saving at the point of saving Wayne's job kind of effort, then maybe. Or the flip side, if we'd gone well and we were in a chance of winning it, then maybe rushing back. But we don't stand to gain anything by rushing Josh Navidi back, especially with the run of injuries he's done in the last 18 months or so.
Is he in the 23 for you though, or is he, just not there?
I suppose in terms of better cover off the bench, because he can do six, seven, eight at a push. he's better than Jack Morgan as that cover. But the issue there is if you put him on the bench and then someone's down in the first two minutes and he ends up playing a full game, so I'd probably be tempted to just stick with Jack Morgan.
I would go Jack Morgan over Tane Basham, and I would not I would not bring Navidi in. But then I said the same thing about Toby, didn't I? And he had an absolute blinder and it's hitting red hot form. So what the hell do I know? Yeah. But yeah, he'll play a lot. Yeah, and then obviously Toby and Moriarty alongside that. Right, halfbacks, same again.
Yeah. Yeah, they went well. I mean, it went okay, didn't it? Especially second half. I mean, if we can, like I say, if we can carry on from where we left off in the second half in Twickenham, it's going to be an exciting game. Mm. And so for that reason, I wouldn't change anything again. Owen Watkins' protocols have to be passed. Otherwise, I would say the whole back line the same. Dan? More cuffy.
Yeah, I mean, look, tell you what, that is something, obviously we mentioned it last week, but that's something to be excited about. And geez, he's got a good record against France, hasn't he? So, so yeah, I mean, that could well be another exciting run out for the big horse. Dan, you change anything in the back line?
I'm tempted to go.
Where does Lloyd Williams come into that back line for you?
Yeah, I'm just trying to work out now. Could we have him at 10?
Left wing, obviously.
He could be 10 for Cardiff, man. Yeah, left wing, yeah. So this won't be popular with you, but Kieran Hardy, I'd be tempted to start at 9 against France.
Oh. After Thomas Williams' game the other week?
Thomas coming off the bench against France. I can't see it happening, but I'd be tempted to have a look at that.
Fair play to Hardy. He came on, made a difference, scored a try. I think that was Thomas's one of his best games, if not his best game for Wales. You've got of all the chopping and changing we've had at 9 under Pivac, I think you've got to stick with him there for me.
I think we will stick with him. Yeah,
it's important to remember that it doesn't make too much difference who plays 9 for us because they're up against Antoine Dupont.
That's very true. Yeah. Yeah, you could have a regenerated 21st century Gareth Edwards playing there, and it would probably be academic. Quick prediction.
How good would that be, mind?
How
good would that be? I'd love that.
Yeah, that's computer game stuff, that, isn't it? That'd be magic.
Yeah, it is.
Let's go to Murph for your score prediction first.
France by 15.
Daniel.
France by 8.
I was going to go with that. I'll go France by 6.
Mm.
There you go.
That is a good game, rugby.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we do not have too long to wait. Yeah, let us hope for a good game. And obviously, all the reaction will be here on next week's show. If you've enjoyed this week's show, then please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you are able to do so. We did, in fact, have a review in this week. And as I say, if you send us in a review, we'll always make sure that we give you a shout out at some point. So, as you may be able to tell, I'm just furiously trying to find it on iTunes so I can so I can read it out. Murph, have you got a song prepared for us?
No, but I could do the slogan if you want.
Yes, please do.
Caffeine, not nicotine, kids.
Kids. I'm sure we've got loads of kids listening to me. Yeah. I hope not.
We also need to finish off the back line, don't we?
I think we do.
Hey, well, go on, Dan. Sorry, we were all going...
If you've got changes, then we do need to do the back line.
No, I haven't. No, I didn't know. Okay. And that's the end of the show.
But thank you for the filling. It was much appreciated. And thank you to Hackney Osprey, who sent in this review and said, "My own personal echo chamber for Welsh rugby. Pleased to have stumbled across this podcast. Means I don't have to bother with Scrum 5 anymore." So, yeah, if you've stumbled across this or you want to help your mates stumble across it, leave us a review. Tell them down the clubhouse. Tell them on the terraces. Tell them wherever you fancy. But, yeah, we'll be back to chat rugby with you next week. Thanks for listening.
Podcast Network.